This is the last question. You've spoken a lot about internationalism, but I was hoping that you could talk about how, in furthering the world revolution, there can be a contradiction between building socialism in a country where power has already been seized and actually furthering the overall world revolution.
Yeah, well, there can be an acute contradiction not only in socialist society, but even before then. You know, like the U.S. government declares a war on terrorism and puts people on the terrorist list. Well, without, you know, going into a bunch of detail, you know, the stakes get raised all the way around. You know, like they, you know, as we've been speaking about, these are not people that care about truth. You know, people can be completely, you know, radically different from anything to do with terrorism, but if it's useful to them to call them terrorists, they'll do so. You know, and obliterate the distinction. You know, basically, from their point of view, there's no legitimate revolution of any kind. I don't care how many masses are involved against that's, you know, directed against their interests. That's inconceivable. That's like a tautology by definition. You know, it's a completely circular argument. By definition, anything that would be against their interests in any kind of significant way is illegitimate. So there's no such thing as a legitimate revolution that's aimed against their interests. So in the world today, when terrorism has become the big enemy and target and the banner under which, you know, this whole grand strategy of, you know, further extending and refortifying and further entrenching, you know, an unchallenged U.S. world empire and hegemony, when that's being waged on the banner of war against terror, well, then anybody that stands in the way of that is susceptible to and, you know, quite likely could at some point be called terrorists. I mean, after all, what was that guy's name, Page, in the education department called the teachers' union terrorists? I mean, you know, he sort of halfway had to take a half step back, but imagine, you know, because they were interfering with, you know, the implementation of the Bush education program. He calls them the teachers' union terror. They weren't throwing any bombs at anybody or blowing up any facilities or assassinating anybody. Now, that, you know, that was sort of half metaphorical, but in today's world, to invoke that word even in a semi-metaphorical way is chilling and was meant to be. So, you know, it's not just in the future society that carrying out proletarian internationalism can bring you into acute, you know, can come into acute contradiction with being able to do other work and even being able to exist. So, you know, we'll have this contradiction all the way through. You know, in this particular case, we have to do, you know, exposure and political mobilization to defeat attempts, you know, to carry out suppression under the banner of anti-terrorism or whatever. But then things do take a leap when you get to socialist society, both in the sense of, well, you know, all the things we're talking about. Here you are, you know, it's like the imperialists don't just step back and say, oh, socialism. You know, like that drunk congressman in the elevator, gets in the elevator with the PL members, you know, and says, oh, socialism, I used to be for socialism when I was a youth. No, that's not their attitude toward, you know, toward real socialism, you know, the dictatorship of the proletariat. It's like, boom, you know. And, you know, the only reason that they don't just move on and smash it physically is if they're not able to, both literally and or because of other, you know, geostrategic and political calculations and contradictions within their own country at a given time or whatever. So you're dealing with that constantly, and at various times it becomes very concentrated and acute. And, you know, as materialists, you know, you do not, while it's very important to study military history and theory and all that, you do not defend your country from imperialist military attack by throwing books at the imperialists. You know, that has to be translated into actual material force that can defend your socialist country, which means, as I was saying earlier, you divert production a significant amount. This is a big thing that happened in the Soviet Union in the 30s, by the way, which is rarely talked about. In fact, any kind of materialist analysis is almost entirely absent from the usual discourse, as they say these days, about communism and the Soviet Union. But from the early 30s on, they diverted a significant section of their See, and it was all sort of a package. They diverted a significant section of their production to military, to the buildup of their military. And they had sort of a mechanistic, mechanical, materialist line about, you know, the military struggle. I mean, Stalin said about World War II, whoever has more tanks and planes will win. Well, you know, so then, you know, they identified not only, socialism with industrialization, they one-to-one identified defense of the socialist revolution with that, with industrialization, and in particular with certain kinds of, you know, heavy, you know, weaponry to carry out that defense. That skewed a lot of what they were doing from the early 30s on, in addition to other factors. So, but even if they hadn't made those mistakes, I'm sorry, but if you're, you know, if you're invaded by Germany with a panzer divisions and it's, you know, and it's Luftwaffe and all this shit, you better have something to deal with it, you know. Having people out shouting at it is not probably going to lead to much good result, you know. So you got a real problem. Even if you had a better, you know, less mechanical materialist and better overall approach to that whole question, you still got to have material things, and you got to, you know, and one out of every 30 people of a certain age in a population or whatever, just take an arbitrary figure, is in your military. They're not doing other things on the one hand, and at the same time, not only are they not contributing very much to production, they've got to be fed and clothed and equipped. And there's got to be facilities for them to train. And there's got to be time for them to engage in the intellectual activity of learning the principles of defending the revolution, of waging warfare, to put it simply. So, you know, and at the same time, here come the exception to the rulers, you know, and you're going to put some funding in there, and then here come the fact that the other side has bombed, in the course of the revolution, most of the cities, and even what housing and health care there was has been devastated, and you're trying to rebuild that rapidly. And meanwhile, somebody's in the midst of all this, you know, trying to transform the social relations and the production relations and the culture and everything else. All of which, by the way, you know, look, this is America, okay? You know, what is the favorite activity of the youth? It involves, you know, their, you know, this, you know, this is a big problem they're talking about health-wise, you know, that instead of, you know, back in my day, but you know, people would go out and be physically active. Now you have virtual substitutions for being physically active. So, A, you're not physically active, and B, you're sitting there on a couch stuffing down food intermittently while playing video games. Well, that's another story. But you know, look, there's a tremendous quantity, my point is, of entertainment in this kind of society. Now, that we know what that stems from. What's the material basis of that? Not only exploitation of millions of people here, but hundreds of millions even more intensely and brutally around the world, to provide the material basis for that, the literal physical things that are produced, and just the money to be able to sell them and have it be in circulation. So, you know, and films, you know, and iPods, you know, and you can download and you can get entertainment at any time you want it from anywhere. I mean, never mind the quality of it, but there's a lot of quantity, and some of the quality is pretty good, let's be honest. Let's not be one-sided. Some of it is artistically good. Once in a while, there's even some progressive stuff that gets through, but it's artistically good. Okay, now you have a new society, and you're not going to try to compete with the old one in a quantitative sense, but, you know, okay, you know. There's one movie every 6 months, you know, making movies takes money. You know, I mean, you know, unless you're going to have, you know, I mean, I get what they make, the witches or whatever it was, you know, they made with a handheld camera or whatever. But, you know, you can't, you know, you're going to have productive forces, you know, technology to make movies and to produce music that people can listen to. So you got to, you know, and that's part of what people legitimately want. Now, there's some parasitic stuff that's all wrapped up with, but, you know, I mean, what kind of world with no culture, you know? No dancing, no laughing, forget it, you know? So, you know, you got to meet all these needs. And then there's not just the material factor of, like, you know, what you might or might not be able to do to assist a revolutionary movement in another part of the world that's, you know, in an important confrontation with the imperialists. But here comes the imperialists through, you know, third parties or others, saying, if you support this, then all bets are off in terms of what we're going to do in relation to you. Whereas if you lay off from supporting that, then maybe we'll hold back from, you know, that kind of thing. Well, there, here comes Lenin's point. How do you make compromises without compromising principle? How do you do what you can do without trying to overstep what you can do? And how do you, to get to the heart of your question, how do you handle those contradictions? You got all these other material and political and practical and ideological pulls on you, and then you got the direct confrontation with the imperialists who are going to make you pay a price, just as they will now, for supporting revolutions in other places. And this, you know, this is where you have to be very clear on, you know, strategic questions and on principles. You know, if it were easy to do all this stuff we're doing, we'd have a lot more people with us. If it were easy to be proletarian internationalists and at the same time do all the things you want to do within a particular country, you know, we'd just waltz right through it. But we're going to have these intense contradictions, and we're going to have to sort out, okay, what is a compromise that we might have to make, and what is a compromise we cannot make because it's a matter of principle? What is something we might give up here in order to assist there in one way or another? What is it we're willing to risk here in order to assist something there? And what shouldn't we, because not just because this is, you know, we're turning this into capital, this is our revolution and nothing else matters, you know, and then it's turned into its opposite, but because it's important for the world revolution whether you have a socialist country or not. Now, in an overall strategic sense, in the grandest strategic sense, you should be willing to lose a socialist country or risk losing it in order to actually make bigger gains in the world revolution. And if there is a realistic prospect, not a guarantee, but a realistic prospect of making greater gains, then you should be willing to put the whole socialist country on the line in that kind of a context where you can see that by doing so, you know, you might actually have a real, you would have a realistic chance of contributing to greater leaps in the whole, and you'd be ahead on a world scale. But if you go around doing that lightly and in the absence of that kind of a, you know, consideration or that kind of determination, and you just say, oh, well, we want to be internationalists, you're not being internationalist at all if you don't defend your socialist country, at least up to the point where the proletarian revolution would advance more on a world scale by your risking it. If you don't defend it up to that point, then you're not being an internationalist. And people around the world are not going to thank you for losing the, you know, the socialist country that they have. Because that, it is, does in an ultimate sense, is something they have. And look at what's happened to us because of the, you know, revisionist coup and the reversal in China. We're still paying for that in all kinds of ways, practically, ideologically, politically, every other way. So, you know, this is the way the tension gets expressed. You have to make a calculation. If you're coming from proletarian internationalism, what at any given time holds the best prospect, because you have no guarantees, holds the best prospect of, you know, in the sum total of back and forth, without being, you know, reductionist and mechanical, but looking at the sweep of things, what holds the best prospect for the advance of the proletarian revolution on a world scale? And if that involves putting the socialist country on the line and risking it, well, then it does. But only if that's what you can say scientifically, and not because, well, you know, people are struggling and we have to be willing to risk things. That's not scientific either. You know, you throw away your socialist state for something that's, you know, not nearly as significant to the people of the world, well, then you're not doing right. But you refuse under any conditions to risk your socialist state, even if greater advances can be made, then you're not doing right either. And that's the way we'll have to come at it. There won't be any easy way, believe me, to, you know, to resolve these kind of questions as they will very, you know, repeatedly and very acutely pose themselves. But we can learn the methodology and the principles for how we can approach all these kind of contradictions. And we can raise the understanding and, you know, give this kind of orientation and methodology to growing numbers of masses, and on a whole other level once we get to socialism, so that they can also be the part of the process of struggling these things through and arriving at a correct determination.